Bhaktivedanta Sindhu. This is the first division, second chapter, discussing the various limbs of devotional service. We heard about three types of dhyan. They all come under one category, number 46, called atadhyanam, meditation. This is one of the 64 limbs of bhakti, meditation. We also have meditation. Not only Ashtanga yogis or Gyan yogis or Raj yogis, they have meditation process, but we have the highest form of meditation because we meditate on Radha Govinda, Prem Purushottam, Leela Purushottam, Radha Govinda. So, Rupa Goswami explains that under this category of meditation, he divided it into three aspects: Rupa Dhyan, Guna Dhyan, and Leela Dhyan. And now there's even a fourth aspect. So we not only had, like people say, do you do meditation? Do you have meditation, or do you just jump up and down chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna? No, we can say we do four kinds of meditation. Watch out. We do four kinds of meditation. We meditate on Krishna's transcendental form, Rupa Madhurya. We meditate on Krishna's transcendental qualities, Guna Madhurya, sweet qualities. And we meditate on his Leela, his sweet pastimes. And now, today we find we have a fourth type of meditation called Seva Dhyanam. Seva Dhyanam Yita Purantare. He doesn't say which one, but he says in another Puran, this is also one of the four types of meditation, the four subcategories, 46th. The 46th of 64 limbs of devotion, meditation, there are four branches. And there's Rupam, Gunam, Leelam, and Sevam. Meditation on one's service. This is what it says here. Manaseno parapacharena paricharya harim sada. Pare van manasa gamyam tam sakshat pratipedire. Constantly serving the Lord with items produced in the mind. It's very interesting. Translation says seva dhyanam, meditation on service. So generally, we might think, well, I meditate on sankirtan. But here, the verse is cited, manas, manaseno pacharena, paricharya harim sada. Pare van manasa gamyam tam sakshat pratipedire. Constantly serving Lord Krishna with items or different articles produced in the mind. Some devotees have directly attained the Lord, who is not approachable for others by word or mind. So this is basically indirect way, it's talking about manasi seva. Because in manasi seva, we don't serve our hands, our working senses, our karmindriya are at rest. Our hands, our mouth, our legs, our stomach, our reproductive organs, they are not engaged, they're not doing anything. They're passive, almost appearing as if the physical body is at rest. But the gyanindriya, the mind, this is very much working, thinking of Krishna's form, and identifying with the feelings of Krishna and Radha and the gopis and their associates in a particular pastime, what type of gona rasas they're experiencing, what type of anubhavas, what type of sanchari bhavas are rising and falling in the course of their exchanges and loving pastimes. So the thinking about the form, thinking about the holy dham, meditating on the holy dham, meditating on the form of the Lord and his associates, and meditating on the pastime. This is, you could say, this is the culmination of the 46th principle of bhakti called meditation. This is the complete form of meditation. Because when one does seva dhyanam, which is translated by Rupa Goswami to be basically manasi seva, constantly it says sada hari. Hari Harim sada manasen manaseno pacharina paricharya harim sada. Always, when one is constantly always engaged in serving Hari within the mind, with articles with paricharya, with articles in the mind, then this is the type of meditation. So when one engages in manasi seva, naturally he automatically engages in the other three types of meditation. He meditates on the form of the Lord, the qualities of the Lord, and the pastimes of the Lord. So each one was leading to the next one. First, we meditate Rup Dhyan, then Guna Dhyan, then Lila Dhyan, then the culmination, perfection of all three, which incorporates all three, is the fourth branch of the 46th limb of bhakti called meditation, or dhyanam, which is Seva Dhyanam. Manasi Seva Dhyanam. Meditating on serving Krishna in the mind. So, therefore, the conclusion is, because this is the conclusion, this is the culmination or the conclusion or the summation of the 46th principle of bhakti. The 46th limb of devotion is basically manasi seva. Because he's giving four branches of it. First, the 46th limb of devotion. There are 64 limbs. So this is number 46, meditation. And in Prahlad Maharaj's list of nine, the 64 becomes nine, the nine becomes five, the five becomes one. 64 into nine, nine into five, five into one. Right? 64 limbs of devotion becomes Navavida Bhakti, nine limbs of devotion, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam is number three of the nine. And Smaranam means Manasi Seva. Smaranam means remembering. Smaranam means remembering Krishna. What? Krishna's form, his qualities, his pastimes, and serving in that remembrance, which is Manasi Seva. So this is the nine limbs, and then the nine limbs can be summarized and practiced in five limbs, which are called Panchanga Bhakti, Mathura Vasastali, living in the Holy Dham, which means the Holy Dham is living in you. Because this is really, it says Mathura Mandale Vasastali, to be situated in the mandala of Mathura. To be situated in the mandala. Mandala means the circle, the place, the area. So this brain is an area. This brain between our ears is an area. It's a mandal. It's a circle, oblong or whatever it is. So when that means Mathura Vasastale, which is one of the five most important limbs of devotion, it means that Mathura Mandala, Brajadam, Sridham Vrindavan must live within us. Because it's not enough to come and put... It's not that we live in Brajmandal. Yes, I'm living in Brajmandal. Because Jiva Goswami, this is not the meaning of living in Vrindavan. Living in Vrindavan means that you're living in Vrindavan, that Vrindavan is living in you. The meaning of living in Vrindavan means that Vrindavan is living within you. That the Rupam, Gunam, Leelam, and Manasi Sevam of the Lord are residing within the mandala of our mind. Manasa mandala. They're residing there. And we're always moving in that stale. And that sthan, in that place, we're always moving there and thinking there and feeling there and willing there and engaging willfully in different services with our mind. So this is the purview of Manasi Seva. As Jiva Goswami qualifies this principle by saying, if you cannot live in Vrindavan, which means live in the transcendental abode of Brajabhumi, then you can live anywhere outside. But, what does he say? You must live in Vrindavan in your mind. Have you read this? So that means you live in Vrindavan in your mind, means Vrindavan lives in you. Because your mind is you. It's part of us. A very integral and necessary part of our existence is our mind. So therefore, the conclusion is, we don't live in Vrindavan. Real living in Vrindavan means that Vrindavan lives in you. The best place to have Vrindavan live in you is to have your body in Vrindavan also. Because then the senses of your body are becoming purified by the contact with the transcendental elements of the Dham. The Chintamani elements, the spiritual elements, the spiritual air, the spiritual ground, the Bhumi, the Raj, the Brajaraj, the remnants of the Lord, the saliva of the Lord, the dust of his feet, the powder from the breast of the gopis, the kunkum and alta and chandan and camphor, and kasturi falling from their bodies and mixing in all the lila stalis, the Jamuna River, the Manasi Ganga, Prem Sarova, Radhika, and Shamakun, and all these sacred rivers that are full of Prem. So when our body is living here, then all the elements of our body become purified by contacting the Holy Dham. By seeing the Holy Dham, our eyes become purified, spiritualized. The trees, the animals, the Brijvasis, the devotees, the Leela Stalis. By walking in the land of Vrindavan, our sense of touch becomes purified. The hands, the feet. By touching the Brijvasis, by serving the Brijvasis, petting the Brijvasi cows and feeding the Brijvasi animals and feeding the Brijvasi children, embracing the Brijvasi trees. And this way our sense organ, the sense of touch, sparsha, becomes purified. And by smelling the sweet flowers offered to Giriraj, when we go on Govardhan Parikrama in different seasons, oh, so many sweet flowers, which are all being offered by Bhumi Mata to Giridhari. That is her offering, her love offering. The Kadamba flowers, you go by, you walk one place. Oh, wow, this Kadamba, it's Sharad season. The Kadamba is blooming at Govardhan. And we become inebriated, we become intoxicated by that beautiful fragrance of remnants of the flowers that Giridhari has smelled. And given that, he's giving his sacred remnants to the Parikrama devotees. Then you go by some place where some neem trees are blossoming. Neem has a very sweet flower, actually, a very bitter. Bitter fruit and bitter leaves with the flowers, very sweet, very nice fragrance. And palasha trees and arjuna trees, so many trees when they flower and blossom. Very, very nice fragrance. So, and this is the ideal. This is the real way to live in Vrindavan. Physically in Vrindavan, and Vrindavan is living in us, in our mind. So this conclusion of Rupa Goswami's discussion of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, of the 46th principle of devotion, It's all about this principle of Manasi Seva, which incorporates the three other aspects of meditation, dhyanam. Rup dhyan, guna dhyan, lila dhyan, and seva dhyan. Oftentimes devotees ask the question, when we're chanting Hare Krishna, Ma Mantra, can we meditate on our seva? Is that acceptable? And then someone may say, yes, it says here, seva dhyanam. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is saying, seva dhyanam, meditating in one's service. And if we look closer, the verse in citation or reference from Puran tells this is all about manasi seva, serving with items collected in the mind, serving the Lord. So you can stretch it to mean, okay, I'm collecting books from the BBT Godown, and I'm going out to distribute them. That can also be acceptable. And that has to be, of course, clarified with one's bhajan shiksha guru, whether that's acceptable meditation. But traditionally, and generally, this term is rather restricted. It's seva dhyan. Is of course one of the higher levels of meditation. As we hear repeatedly, all of these principles of devotion have different hierarchical expressions. For example, remembrance. Remembrance, there's smriti, then there's smaranam, then there's dhyanam, then dhruvanu smriti, then there's samadhi. So there's different levels of one principle. Or you can say chanting. Chanting is one, kirtan. Shravanam Kirtanam. So Kirtan is one form of devotional practice. But then there's different levels of Kirtan or Nam Japa. One is to perform chanting, but it's with aparad, Nam aparad. Another type of chanting is called Namabhas. Another type of chanting is called Shudanam. But then that's Shudanam with Asakti, Shudanam with Abhav, then Shudanam with Prem. Then Shudanam, then what is the Kirtan? What is Gopi Kirtan? What is Radha Kirtan? Because Radharani also chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So as Radharani's chanting her Kirtan, her limb of devotion, her Kirtan is the same as Bhakti Jo. So they're both performing one limb of devotion, Shravanam Kirtanam. So you see the different levels. So the same thing with this 46th principle, which is meditation. dhyanam. So meditation has different levels, rupa dhyanam, guna dhyanam, lila dhyanam, and then finally entering the lila. So this expression, seva dhyanam, is not about meditating as a neophyte at the level of anartha nivritti. This is the topmost expression of the 46th devotional principle, which is given here. Seva dhyanam. Seva dhyanam begins at the level of asakti and bhava. When one has realized their siddha-deha, and then they can enter into the lila, and they won't be doing book distribution there or making pizzas in Govinda's restaurant, because my seva, I'm a cook in Govinda's restaurant, so when I'm chanting Hare Krishna, I want to meditate on my seva, right? Swamiji, is it all right to meditate on my seva while I'm chanting Hare Krishna? What is your seva? I'm a cook in Govinda's, so I want to meditate on making good pizzas to please the devotees. No, sorry. This is not acceptable. You should hear the holy name and just hear, Tatrinu. And then maybe you meditate on the meaning. In other words, the whole practice of bhakti has to be guided by the teachings of the acharyas. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining Nam Bhajan for the beginners. And Srila Prabhupada is also giving so many instructions for chanters of the holy name. So we should follow them and not concoct our own means. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur is telling that when one chants the holy name of the Lord, if the mind is wandering from the pure vibration of the holy name, then one should inject the meaning of the holy name into his mind. One should fill his mind simultaneously with the transcendental vibration of Krishna's holy name and the Maha Mantra, plus the meaning of the holy name, and the meanings are given in the Shastras, given Hari Bhakti Vilas and Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself. And we will accept the appropriate meaning, or the meaning which is appropriate to our level of devotion. And again, this will be approved and sanctioned by Sri Guru. So this principle, so meditation is a wide range of meditation, from ultraviolet to infrared. There's not just chant, meditate. Because the verse, first of all, that he's citing is all about manasi seva. It says seva dhyanam, the fourth branch of the 46th limb of devotion, seva dhyanam. Then he breaks it into four parts. Rupa dhyanam, guna dhyanam, lila dhyanam, seva dhyanam. Meditating on service. And then he says, this means constantly serving the Lord with items produced in the mind. Some devotees have directly attained the Lord, who is not approachable for others by words or mind. Then he cites a story. There's a story related in Brahmavivart Puran. There was a Brahmin living in a city of Pratishtan. So this is, excuse me. A Brahmin once lived in Prashtinapur. Though he was very poor, he had a peaceful mind, regardless of how difficult the circumstances were, because he believed that a man suffers or enjoys the results of his previous karma. One day he was taking bath daily in the Godavari River, and after performing his morning duties, he used to sit in a lonely place, practice pranayama to pacify his mind, and then he would mentally install a murti of Lord Narayan in his mind. Then he would start meditating that he was wearing very pure silk clothes, and then he was lying, he was prostrating himself before the deity, and then he would go and collect water from the sacred Ganga and Jamuna in golden and silver pitchers. Of course, he's worshipping Lord Narayan. So his idea of upachar, or paraphernalia, is very opulent. Gopis, they collect water in clay pots. If the gopis were to collect water in silver or gold pots, then Krishna wouldn't have any fun. Because when Krishna would throw stones at their pots, they would bounce off and go, ding! And then they would look. When they carry water in clay pots, then Krishna can shoot his slingshot from hiding behind a kandamba tree, boom, if he shoots a little tiny stone, it will make a little tiny pinprick in the pot. And that's a lot of fun. There's different ways to have fun. Shoot a small stone and make a small hole. Then the water slowly drips out of the pot. And the gopis are accustomed to having a few drops of water on their shoulders or back, because when they collect the water, the pot is naturally wet and they put on their head. So a few drops fall on their head and their clothes. You can see even today there's some. And they tolerate that. They don't think about it. And they're talking and they're absorbed and talking to the sakhi next to them. Of course, they're not talking prajapa, or they're just talking about Krishna's leela and all kinds of sweet pastimes that they've heard and seen and enjoyed with Krishna. But while they're walking back to Barsana or Yavatgram or wherever, Chitsoli, this tiny hole in that water pot is continually dripping water down their back. And they're getting wetter and wetter and wetter. And the pot is getting emptier and emptier and emptier. So by the time they get back to their houses, the pot is totally empty. The pot is empty, but their hearts are full. This is the trick. Krishna's trick. He makes us empty in the material world and full in the spiritual world. He empties out our material accounts and fills up our spiritual bank account. So they got the Barsana and they went to reach up for the pot. Oh, it's so light. Oh, there's no water. Oh, Sakhi. And they don't see any hole because it's a very minute hole. They say, Sakhi, oh, I don't have any water either. Oh, what has happened? Oh, maybe we were absent-minded, and when we were down at the Yamuna, we were so much talking about Krishna, we forgot to fill. We walked all the way from Barsana to Yamuna, and we thought we filled up our pots, but we were the whole time talking this Krishna, 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 all about Krishna. And then in our absent-mindedness, that we went with empty pots, we put empty pots on our head, and we walked all the way back to Barsana with empty pots, not even knowing it, because we were so much absorbed in Harikatha. Just like if you ever go on Sankirtan with the devotees, and you're or anywhere with devotees, if you travel with devotees, it's quite enjoyable. And you go, you get in the car, and they say, how far is it to Jaipur? And they say, 5 hours. I say, 5 hours in the car on Indian roads? Oh my God. I don't know how you're going to survive. And so then someone starts reading some Harikatha, and then let's have a kirtan, and bhajan, and this, that, some quiz about Krishna Leela, asking questions. And then pretty soon, hey, wow, we're in the pink city. We're there. Look, all the buildings are painted pink. Wow, what time is it? Oh, it's 5 hours. Hey, 5 hours went by. We didn't even know it. And any devotee must have that experience. Traveling with devotees and absorbed by yourself, even for that matter. Absorbed in Harikatha, and then you travel vast distances in large amounts of time, and it seems like a flash. So this is all, gopis have the same experience on a regular basis. They become totally absorbed in Krishna. They're always absorbed in Krishna. So then the other gopi said, no, that's not possible. That we came with empty pots, because look, we're soaking wet. Yes, I'm also wet. But no, it's not. But how do we get wet? Well, we were laughing. We weren't crying. We were talking nice pastimes. We were laughing. We weren't talking about separation from Krishna. We didn't cry all the way from the Yamuna to Barsana. If we were crying, then actually our clothes would be soaked with our tears. But we were only laughing and telling all hasiras and all funny stories about Madhumangal and Krishna and holy and this and that. What has happened? What has happened? So they sat down, they started thinking, and they were praying to Narayan, please reveal the secret of this mystery. How our clothes became all wet, but our pots are all empty. Then one gopi came up, some Lalita or some clever sakhi. What are you discussing, sakhis? Oh, we're all soaking wet and our pots are empty? We can't figure it out. Lalita's very, very clever. She's Vidagdi. She says, I think Krishna's at the bottom of this. Because whenever there's something we can't figure out, whenever there's something mysterious, and we can't understand why it's happening to us, who has done this to me, what is happening, and we can't figure it out, we can always point our finger towards Krishna. He's behind everything. Oh, why is this happening to me? What did I do wrong? This shouldn't happen to me. I'm a good guy after all. And then you trace it out and say, oh, Krishna, you're playing tricks with me. You're testing me. You're doing something. Okay, TK. I'm not going to fail the test. Chalita Sakhi, she let me see her pot. And then she took the pot and she held it up to the sunshine. And she looked, Acha. I see there's some sunshine coming through inside this dark pot. There's a small hole there. Then she looked on the outside and she saw the hole. She says, see this hole, Sakhi? Very small hole. I think this hole was made by Krishna. This looks like his work. Looks like his signature over here. And then, oh, yeah. Actually, that's a fact. When we were walking from the Yamuna, we got about 50 meters from the Yamuna. We felt some very powerful vibrations in our heart. We looked all around. We looked up in the trees. We couldn't find Krishna anywhere. We just felt that somebody's here, some very special person is here, and our hearts were vibrating, trembling. And that must have been the very spot where he pierced our pots with a little stone. That rascal. Then again they got absorbed in rebuking Krishna. So this is why the gopis don't have silver and gold pots. Then sometimes Krishna wants to have fun all at once. So he takes a big rock and a big slingshot. And he hides a long distance away. And he shoots from a long distance, big, with a powerful slingshot. Boom! And then that rock hits the clay pot and the whole thing shatters. Boom! And then, the gopis are totally drenched, head to toe in one go. And then, oh no, and they know completely exactly this. Shamsundar! Go to Shum! And they look all around, they can't see him, they can't catch him. He's laughing and laughing, and Madhumangal's sides are popping out, and ribs are breaking. So much fun he's having. So then it goes on like this. But this Brahmin, he's meditating. I'm meditating. Oh, Narayan's in my heart. I've seated Narayan on a very beautiful singhasan, all diamond-studded gold in the singhasan with all beautiful gems and such opulence. And then I've walked to the Ganga and Yamuna, and I've carried some beautiful, beautifully ornately designed silver and gold pots. And I brought them back. And now I've bathed the Lord with that wonderful water. And then I've offered him chapan bhog and all kinds of pakka bhog cooked in ghee. And then I offered him sandalwood paste and kasturi and garlands. And I performed artik with 108 diya, ghee lamps, and incense, water. Then I finished the mental worship. I blew a mental conch shell in my mind. I blew a conch shell. So this, he would do this very in a very grand and opulent way, just like a king. And he was very happy and happy mind to do it. And after a long time of such mental worship, one day the Brahmin decided to prepare some payas. Payas means kheer or sweet rice, with fine rice and cow's milk and misri. And he poured it into a golden bowl. Then he offered it in his mind, to the Lord in his mind. But before offering it in his mind, he wanted to examine. That picture is there, of course. Nectar devotion. The Brahmin is sticking his finger. Did I see that one? And he sticks his finger in the sweet rice. Because it's hot. So he wants to see, is it too hot to offer to the Lord? Like a mother tests the milk before she offers it to her baby. She heats up the milk, then she puts it in a bottle with a little thing on it, nipple on it. Then she squeezes it onto her wrist, puts some on her wrist, and she feels it. Oh, is it too hot? If it's too hot, she puts it in some bowl of cold water, cool it down like this. Has to be exactly right temperature because she doesn't want to burn the baby's tender belly. So a mother does that for a child. What to speak of a devotee for his Lord? So then he put his finger in, just the tip of his finger, and the nail is contaminated, just the tip of his right finger. Then it was very, very hot. Very, very hot. And he said, oh, this is very, it's too hot. This is much too hot to offer. I have to cool it down with fan with some banana leaf or put it, surround it with some cold water in some bigger bowl or whatever. So then that's what he did. He's all in his meditation, and he was absorbed in this meditation of offering sweet rice to his Lord Narayan, conceived in his mind. And when his finger touched the hot sweet rice, then it burned. It actually burned, and he woke up, ow, 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 ow. And he saw his finger was red hot and burned with some blister on it. So with this, his meditation broke. Meanwhile, in Vaikuntha, Lord Narayan was sitting with Lakshmi Devi. He started laughing and smiling. Ha! Oh, this is very good. Just see what happened. And then Lakshmi Devi said, "What's the joke? Come on, tell me. You're smiling, laughing, and you have some inside joke, and you're not telling me. What's going on?" He said, oh no, my devotee, I'll take you, this very special devotee of mine in South India. He's been meditating every day for years and years. And today, in his mental meditation, he burned his mental finger. But I arranged so his physical finger also got burned. And now he's crying because he burned his finger. So, then Narayan, he sent his celestial car. And he picked his Garuda Airlines, whatever. He picked up that devoted Brahman, he brought him to Vaikuntha. And then he told Lakshmi all about him and blessed him with an eternal seat by the side of the Lord himself. So this is called, of course, Samipya Mukti, that he was given liberation and to sit near the Lord. So this is the story that illustrates this principle of meditation on services to the Lord.